What division were you with? You've told me and I've forgotten.
First Cav.
Your First Cav?
Alpha Troop, 1st to the 9th.
That's, you've told me.
That's okay. It's not a...
A19.
Day one conversation.
Where did you go to basic?
Pork.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, all the potential Army aviators went to Polk.
I'm sorry. I'm from that part of the country, and I'm sorry in advance.
They didn't have any of that stuff when I was there. They just had basic training and AIT and probably a few other things that I didn't really care on. I couldn't wait to get that. Basic wasn't bad. And, you know, when we were doing our little thing here, your interview there, I told you, I had a good time in basic.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, we both agreed it was Boy Scouts with pistols, with
that's
weapons.
That's all it was to me.
Yeah.
When I was in the bedding school for boys,
I had a worse time in that 4 week of pre-flight at Fort Walters. That was the most miserable time of my life because they went out of their way to make you quit.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And some of the most obnoxious stuff I've ever had done to me was down there in those 4 weeks.
Was it, because I mean the WOX guys at Rucker complained nonstop when I was going through flight school, but it was chintzy. It was like...
Yeah, they didn't know what really bad was.
I was about to say, they were complaining because they had to do a memo to borrow a pencil and all this other... It was real chintzy stuff like that. What were they doing at Walters to break you off?
You know, the usual get up at 0-dark-100 and do your PT and do your spit shine in your room and then have an inspection. They may have you come down in Class A's or, you know, you were breaking starch 5 or 6 times a day. And then you had to come back and get ready for class, and you spent half the day in class and then the other half on the flight line. And while you were out, well, of course, you know about inspections and underwear having to be rolled certain...
When it's smiling, not frowning.
But, you know, the names, the stenciled on names had to be perfectly lined up with X number of inches on either side. Well, all right, you get that display all set up in your room and this and that. And we had these really obnoxious heavy-duty bunks with these big, fat, tubular frames, and we'd come back after doing all this shit in 120-degree Texas heat, and all our shit would be out in the parade ground. And they would take our rolled-up socks and rolled-up underwear because it wasn't proper size. They'd shove them in the pole of the frame of the bed.
I'm mad for you right now.
But, you know, I used to just sit there and I would think that, you know, I'm getting a $100,000 education at that time, and I'd be damned if I'm going to pound the ground. So I hung in there. Once we got past that, things backed off a little, once we started flying more. But that 4 week of pre-flight was just miserable.
Would you fly in primary? What was your first helicopter?
55.
The 55?
Yeah.
Did you fly the 12 or the 13, or was that just like for basic combat skills?
No, the 13, sorry, that was entrance, TH-13T, that was for instrument, and then we jumped into the Huey.
Did you guys do the same way we did, where it was like contact, instruments, combat skills? No?
No, we did primary, instruments, then contact, and then tactical.
Okay.
You know, when they took us out and put us in it was supposed to be a replica, of a combat. I can't get the words out right now. What we'd be living in and doing when we were in Vietnam, you know, a unit kind of thing. It's pretty nice, though. It had beautiful, clean runways, no dust everywhere. But it was okay. Okay.
So you went straight from the 13 into UH-1?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It was. And even cooler was throughout my entire transition into the Huey, I flew nothing but A or B models. On the day of my check ride, they put me in a Delta model.
Oh.
Oh.
Nice.
But I have to say the Czech pilot was pretty cool about it. He made allowances for it.
Don't expect you to know all the numbers here.
Well, not just the numbers, but the feel for the damn thing. You know, the A and B sit like this, and of course the A had zero power whatsoever, but you know, the Delta model, even with the L-11 engine, and it was a pretty powerful aircraft, but it, you know, it sits backward.
A little tail though?
Yeah, a little bit backward. And it was larger. You know, you had a bigger airframe, so it was kind of difficult. It kind of made me a little nervous. And then when we got into tactics, you know, we did all our low-level navigating and all that kind of crap, and then go out to the gun range and get an introduction to gunnery, you know, get out there and fire the XM-15 system, the 60s, the 460s, the stowed 60s.
The forward-facing ones?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You did that in flight school?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, everybody got a chance to do that.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was fun.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I think, of course, right at the end of my primary class out at Walters, we were still doing solo auto rotations.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's a real confidence builder.
Did you have to go to Rucker afterwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were sending either to Rucker or to Hunter Stewart.
Oh, okay. Why? What did you have to do still? You were qualified in the UH-1.
No, that's where they went for their qualification, just like there were so many students going through.
Really?
We were putting 225, 230, 240 students out every 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
And they were doing the same thing at Hunter. That's where Fred Custer and Bob Anders, the two Marines that were in my class, ended up going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for levity there, we put 15 through about every 2 weeks. And that was at the height of the war, like the absolute height of the war. They were just like skipping classes for a little while recently.
Yeah, that's crazy. We were classic cannon fodder.
200 plus.
Yeah. Hey, here's my flight school yearbook if you want a good laugh.
I would like a good laugh. Whoa! Whoa! H-12s? 23s. Oh my goodness.
There's a gentleman there, Ray Coos, who was the one of the senior TAC officer. He was the senior TAC officer. I walk into my unit in first of the ninth, LZ Sharon. After I have my warm beer and I'm going over to lift, this guy comes up to me and taps me on the shoulder and he says, "Hey, we're going on a nickel ride tomorrow. I'll see you at 0700. He was flying Cobras.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Great guy. Greatest guy.
Did you fly the Cobra at all?
Yeah. No, didn't fly any guns or anything over there. No. I had fun doing what I was doing. I flew sandbag a couple of times, but
that's awesome.
My flight was B3.
Man, things have not changed that much. Goodness gracious.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
There you go with the solo. Cool, they still do it.
Yep.
It flew.
We had a couple of interesting events in my training time. We had one guy, you'll see it, there's a picture of it. He balled up a 55 in training. And then we had a midair and lost four students in Rucker.
It's not good.
Yeah. You know, we used to do these low-level navs, route navigation and things like that, route recons, and it was all clearly laid out. You know, there was X number of minutes of departure in between. You had to fly at 35, 40 knots max. And one of them flew too slow and the other one flew too fast. And they, first law of physics, you don't fit in the same spot.
Big sky, little bullet doesn't always apply, right?
Yeah.
B2.
Yeah, that was me. B2. I'm sorry. No.
There you go. The old 55. What a great helicopter.
Yeah. Is that Rich DeAndrea, that photo? The TAC officer.
Gotta look down.
Oh, let's see. He doesn't have a name. That's okay.
I'm easily seeing here.
Yeah, that should be me. Yeah, there we are. Yep. There's enough. That's one of my favorite pictures from flight school right there.
You barely aged.
Three Yankees from Massachusetts.
I wish we kept the hats. They got rid of the hats. The classes don't have hats anymore.
Yeah,
No
no, it's a
solo
shame.
wings.
No, theoretically, you don't solo.
It's true. You're absolutely correct. It's true. It's absolutely silly. Oh, nice.
This guy here, Ronnie Boatwright, became the state aviation officer in Mississippi after a number of years of aviation. Ended up flying into a strand of wires out in the middle of nowhere.
They say it in every flight school class, look around, a lot of you aren't going to be here soon. And they didn't mean dropped.
Yep.
We crashed five while I was in flight school.
Did you really? Oh.
We crashed five. And that was just the cost of doing business. Two fatals. The others were got up and walked away. One of them was a hawk rolled. He was doing a roll-on landing. Landed a little sideways. I'm trying to remember the name. This is Skelly Stagefield, if I remember correctly. Touchdown a little sideways, rolled. That killed both of them. And then another one was one of the 206s doing a simulated engine failure. For whatever reason, a lot of compressor stalls on the recovery. And student continued the auto. IP failed to take timely corrective action.
Yeah.
IP died. Student got up and walked away. They just had a really hard landing. But the student got up and walked out.
What was that on the 206? Was that an Allison? Huh. There's the. Is that the 55?
55 on its
yeah.
side.
Crash, crash. He was the guy that did that.
Crash, crash.
He graduated.
Hey, at least we can all laugh about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he walked away from it.
Isn't that amazing? Ball up an aircraft. And,
yeah. I'll tell you, the one you could ball up was the 086.
Those things are indestructible. I mean, you got to work at it.
Although, had a scout pilot, young guy, you know, high school to flight schooler, went out on a mission, took a 50 in the left side of the aircraft, landed it in a remote site somewhere, shut it down, the gunner and the observer got out, and he unassed the aircraft, and the 50 had gone through his left oleo strut. The aircraft collapsed and killed him. The rotating blades killed him.
Jesus, when it's your time, it's your time.
Yeah, I mean, it's talk about pissing the Pope off.
That's a good way of putting it. Couldn't have seen that coming. Those cars weren't old then.
There were auto dealerships that would come on base over the weekend, and they would have every stitch of paperwork you needed to include the allotment out of your pay and all you know, financial and legal ramifications, shit for the, and you just put your name on every one of those. They left you that Corvette or whatever the hell it was you wanted to buy, and they went away, and your car was there. Next month, you know, you got X number of dollars coming out of your pay. I don't know how they did that. To this day, we've never been able to figure out how they managed to do that with all that paperwork.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Oh, well, yeah.
Here's a bunch of young guys with money. Disposable income.
That's the guy that was in Vietnam when I got there.
It's so bizarre to see the RLOs not branched aviation.
Yeah.
So weird.
That guy was a sailor, Ben Brook. He's the one that took me to my first Mexican restaurant. He's the guy we call Boats.
Navy guy?
Yeah. We had a couple of Navy guys, a couple of Marines. One of them I'm still friendly with to this day. I just reconnected with the other Marine that we had. We had a...
I'm reading all the captions.
Graduate from my class that went to Hook Transition before he went to Vietnam, and he had a bit of a short fuse and very impatient guy. He was at Camp Evans, which was first of the 9th headquarters when I was there, and we were north in Sharon, and I was taking a couple of guys down to take the Freedom Bird. They were going to get on a caribou and fly down to wherever and then go to either Cameron Bay or someplace to, you know, get their flight going home. And we were coming back down and we heard all this commotion on the air. A fully loaded Hook with human beings ran into a fully loaded caribou with human beings.
Oh, no.
And it was my classmate that was flying it. There were two. There was a east side controller and a west side controller, and he couldn't get them to coordinate. And apparently the findings were he just said screw it and pulled an armful and flew right up into the belly of the caribou.
Have you been back to Walters at all?
Oh yeah, I've been back a couple of times. They turned the barracks up on the hill into a federal prison.
Really?
For a long while, and then they closed it down. And then they moved a National Guard unit in there. And I don't know a lot of Section 8 housing in there right at the moment, but
I've never visited. I have to check it out.
And then just, maybe about 5 miles down the road, going towards Weatherford, there's the Vietnam War Museum that they built that was quite cool. They've got a Huey on a stick out there and it's the old 282nd Black Cats that I was in the reserves when I was at Rucker.
How long was flight school for you? Couldn't have been that long. I was there for 18 months.
Oh no, 32 weeks?
Oh wow.
Oh yeah, I mean they were
cranking them through. I was about to say, like...
Oh, can you go back one?
Significant amount of time.
Here's one of the Bennetts that was numerically ahead of me for NATO Shape Headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that story?
No.
When we were filling out our dream sheets after our tour, I had put Fort Lewis... Colorado. Come on.
Oh, hold on. Carson.
Carson, thank you. And I put somewhere in Hawaii, and then I put Rucker because I wanted to get my standard instrument ticket and do all that, because I wanted to stay as a professional pilot. Well, back in the old serial number days, mine was W3160694. Well, there were two Bennetts that were in my flight class. Rex Bennett was W3160692, and Rex Bennett was W3160693. Of course, that was 694. The two of them ended up going to NATO Shape Headquarters. They needed two effing Huey drivers. I'm still bitter.
I can tell. I would be too. Where did you go after? Rucker?
Yeah.
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 Did you exit active duty from there?
Could you say again?
Did you exit active duty from Rucker?
Correct.
Yeah.
And that's when I went into the Rhode Island Guard.
If I could have been stationed at Rucker after flight school, I would have been.
Yeah, Rucker was nice. I love.
I like.
I consider L.A. my home.
I liked it there.
You're a lightweight boxing champ.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He didn't have to go to Vietnam? He went to Europe?
Well, he was prior service.
Okay.
Did not make it through.
Ah.
We had a lot of prior service that refused to put up with the bullshit. And
it's frustrating.
They weeded him out. I'll tell you what, that 4 weeks of pre-flight did its job.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
We had E6s and E7s that were gone in less than a month, or less than a week, rather.
What branch was your CO? Was he an infantryman?
I believe he was, yeah. Little Jimmy Napier, fucking alcoholic.
I mean, some things never change, right?
Did some of the most unreasonable things and had some of the most ridiculous requests. He's the guy that had Dave Pastor and I go out in the rain. He comes up to the lift section and got to get the mail. The men's morale is low. So this one guy, Dave Pastor, who anytime I had a bad situation, shoot down or shoot up, I was with him for some reason. So we get in the aircraft, this flying down to Evans, hovering down with the crew chief and door gunner with the bamboo pole, hovering sideways down the highway. The weather was just abysmal. We land at the spot where the 123s and the 130s came in, presumably bringing the mail in, and go into the ops office, and there are these two little air people in there, and their eyes go like this. Do you realize there's a typhoon? We flew down in a goddamn typhoon just to pick up the mail.
Is this where you would sing the national anthem?
Yeah.
And
yeah, if anybody got dropped to do 25, we'd come over and start singing the national anthem. We'd pick them up and walk away with them. And that's the shit they were looking for us to do, which I'm sure it wasn't any different when
you were.
Hasn't
changed, yeah. Solidarity, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, thinking on your feet. Yeah.
Who were you flying with the day that you were catching your instruments in your hand?
Dave Pastor.
It was Dave Pastor.
Yeah, it was my very first mission after my nickel ride.
Really?
Yeah, we had a mission that was called a snatch mission, and it wasn't what you think. You'd go out and look for military-age males in civilian clothing and short cropped hair cuts and things like that, and bring them back and ask why you look like you look. And what we do is we put our blue platoon, depending on how big a deal it was, we'd go out there and three aircraft. This day we happened to have two aircraft, and we went out and landed not too far from the ocean, I recall. And the Blues unasked the aircraft, and they were bringing this one guy back. I saw him coming in, and next thing I know, the bushes parted in my chin bubble, and I'm seeing muzzle flashes, and instruments are falling in my lap. Dave was flying pilot command, aircraft commander. I turned around and looked in the back, and the guy that was dragging this little Vietnamese kid threw him into the aircraft, and he hit with his knees right on the floor of the aircraft. And I swear he bent the wrong way. He threw him in that way. Well, we tried to get these kids back in there, you know, these grunts back in there, hovering around. And I'm flying the aircraft while Dave's trying to make contact because we got no radios now. Because everything's just shot to shit.
The helicopter was still flying?
Yeah, it was still flying. We decided, well, we better get back out of there. Get out of there, rather. So we flew back to the Quang Tri Marine base, which was probably about 30 clicks away. And as we're heading out, the transmission oil pressure goes to zero. And all the other instruments are either non-existent or not working. And I'm arguing with Dave whether we should stay low level or fly at altitude in case the transmission decides to seize up. And we had this one door gunner, one of them. The Blues used to fill in as door gunners unless they were actually trained as an aircraft gunner, but that there wasn't a lot of that going on. You mostly took your people and trained them. But I hear Ernie Page, he stuttered. Mr. Pastor, he's trying to say. Mr. And finally he yells, Dave! And I turned around because Dave Pastor's still flying the aircraft. And here's Ernie with his left hand. He's holding it outside the aircraft, blood just streaming. And he knows he better not bleed inside the aircraft because the crew chief will kill him for dirtying it up. They shot his finger off.
It's like, come on, man, we're past that at this point. The helicopter shot up.
I said, Ernie, get, you know, can you, have you got a handkerchief, take your blouse, do anything. Just stop the bleeding, kid. I said, nobody's going to get mad at you. So we brought him back there, and we made it in. And the other aircraft that was with us, the Peter pilot, got shot. And they had no commo at all. We were trying to let somebody know that we were coming. And they came right across the active runways in Quang Tri going to the med pad. And you could hear the tower operator screaming without the radios. But, you know, he couldn't talk to anybody. But we landed, and both aircraft shut down, and that was it. We couldn't fly them anymore. But we were monitoring what was going on, and basically this place where we started picking these people up was a, for lack of a better way of putting it, a regimental headquarters underground. They had a full, you know, hospital with operating rooms and all that crap, and ammo and everything. And then they started bringing in the rest of the grunts. And, you know, they bring in other CAV leg units in. And I forget how many aircraft were lost that day, but that was quite a mess.
What were the Blues, the Blue Platoon?
Blue was an organic infantry platoon that we had.
Okay.
Our mission was recon by fire.
Okay.
And we either did it with the aircraft, or if the aircraft spotted, like, a bunker system or found a cache of weapons, we brought our infantry platoon out that was organic to us, and then they'd go find things or continue the fight. And if they got into heavy shit, we would pull them out, and the first cab would bring the rest of their regular grunt units in, like Cherry Hess would fly the big, you know, the 15, 20, 30 ship formations. The biggest formation I ever flew in was four aircraft, which I like much better. But the Blues were our, you know, the red team were the red with the guns, the white team with the lift, and the blue team was were the scouts, and the blue team were the lift section. So if you had a Cobra or a gunship and a Loach, it was a pink team. If you had a gunship and a lift aircraft, it was a purple team. So
I've never heard this before.
Yeah, but that's what a blue infantryman was. They were our infantry.
I can't believe you got that helicopter back. Jesus.
Yeah, I can't believe we did either.
10,000 parts.
Yeah. And then the day I had my big shoot down He was the guy behind me that took the B-40 and then came forward and chopped my tail boom off. Same guy.
Was it really?
Dave Pastor.
Who were you flying with? Was he in trail?
He took the tail boom off.
We were flight
of three, I think. And I was chopped two and he was three. But the grunts had put me right in front of a godforsaken tree. 75-foot tree. So I was trying to come up and give myself a little space, and he got hit. And we, you know, we heard the automatic weapon fire. They put a B-40 into him, RPG, whatever you want to call it. And I never saw any of it, but next thing I knew, I heard this loud slam, and I'm spinning. And the guy that was flying my Peter pilot was a gunship pilot. And the guy that was flying Dave's Peter pilot was a gunship pilot, because we just didn't have anybody. And apparently I closed the throttle instinctively. Oh yeah, as soon as I did, with the CG being non-existent, we went right over upside down from 100 feet.
Oh my God.
So that was my fun adventure.
That was the one that you had to get pulled out, or you pulled one of them out?
It's the one I had to get pulled out.
Was it Dave that pulled you out?
No, it was Cliff Birdsey, the guy that was in my aircraft.
And I met him in Alexandria.
You did. I'm trying to find...
And Dave's crew survived the crash, too?
A couple of them. All four pilot, aircraft commander and PETA pilot survived.
That's amazing.
And I owe it to the seat, shoulder harnesses and all that. But we lost, I've since forgotten the number of people we lost because of, they tried to jump out and, you know, get contact with a rotor blade or, you know, a B-40 rocket does a lot of damage to human flesh.
Familiar.
But yeah, that was my most fun. Then we had another mission where Dave and I got shot down together.
Come on.
Yeah. Three-peat.
Which one of you is unlucky?
We haven't been able to really figure that out.
It's one of you two is unlucky.
I guess it's the combo.
Yeah, I think.
Maybe you shouldn't have been in the same flight ever.
Well, yeah.
That's crazy.
Fecal matter happens.
Well, but you know what the other half of the story is? You both live to tell about it.
Yeah, that's the amazing part about it. We had a first of the ninth reunion up here in Alexandria a couple of years ago. I managed to get all four of us together. Had been looking for that Dave Pastor for years, literally, since Vietnam. He ended up, I don't want to fly anymore. And he took a direct commission to artillery or something and finished his career as an artillery officer.
He wasn't a warrant?
He was originally. He took a direct commission, but he had decided, I don't want to fly anymore. So.
That's fair.
Been looking all over Holy Hell because our friends up in Indiantown Gap, Jerry Hess and he were high school buddies. And I think they might have even been flight school buddies, but we invited him down, even though he wasn't a first or the ninth guy. He was a Cav. That was quite a reunion. Got the other gunship pilot, Weird Harold Weiss, that flew with Dave in the aircraft that chopped us down.
I like the Weird Harold.
That's the guy I'm passing going to the shower. That was Weird Harold. Here we go.
It's a small army.
Here's the four of us.
It's a small army.
I'm obviously on one outside. The other outside is Dave Pastor. But then the two guys in the middle were the gun pilots. The one in the yellow shirt, Cliff Birdsey, was my PETA pilot. And the other one was Weird Harold. He was with Dave.
But I found... Cliff pulled you out?
Cliff, yeah, pulled me out. Ended up finding Dave Pastor living across Interstate 95 in Stafford, Alabama, from where Amy lives.
Stafford, Virginia.
Sorry. I knew what you meant.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't that... Yeah, it's... Go figure.
Hey, what a gift. All four of you got to have kids.
Yep, absolutely.
That's crazy.
Well, when we ended up getting out of the aircraft, when, you know, I got in and saw the folks that didn't, all the rounds cooking off because of the fire and all that, and I tried to find the other aircraft, and finally I could see something across the PZ and walked over there, kind of half low crawled, half walked, and all I had with all the weapons I used to carry on board my aircraft was my .45 because it was strapped to me. That was it. We had an empty M79 grenade launcher, no rounds, but we did have a PRIC-25 we managed to save. Well, in the other aircraft, they had the blue platoon leader, and Harold had got hurt really bad. He messed up his arm and shoulder. And he's like this, and he's got a survival knife in his mouth. And I see them, and I look at Harold, and I said, Harold, what time is it? I have no idea why I asked him what time it is. And I swear to God, looks at his watch, and he says, Seiko watch takes a licking and keeps on ticking. I mean, is that a story or what?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So we ended up finding a 500-pound bomb crater. There's like a 8 or 9 of us in this bomb crater with nothing to protect ourselves. You know, I got my .45. I'm ready for him. And next thing you know, somebody managed to get a couple Air Force. And have you ever had a 1,000-pounder drop?
It's come up
in
before,
close proximity.
A lot of pressure.
Holy crap. I thought my head was splitting open. But then the gun platoon leader, McLeod, Red McLeod, Harry T. McLeod, oldest captain I've ever seen in my life, ever known in my life, came in and he got me, and we had he had the maintenance platoon leader, a lieutenant. We called him the Fly, because he ate shit and bothered people. But I have got that. I have all the respect in the world for him. One time, that ridiculous CO that we had, Jim Napier, the drunk, was demanding aircraft one time, and we were in the talk, and this guy, the Fly, and I don't remember his name. It's unfortunate. He goes, "Honest to God, sir," he says, "I can shit all the aircraft you need, but I just can't get those rotor blades out." And he turned around and walked up. Here's a three sections: scout, lift, and guns.
Nice.
Yeah, today. See that little pickup, that international pickup truck?
Yeah.
The mess sergeant procured that and drove it from Da Nang all the way to Tay Ninh. I forget how many miles it was. He was not giving that truck up.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, that's where we flew with... they were having trouble in Da Nang with morning rocket attacks and evening rockets. So we would do the... what we called it. Whatever. You know, we'd fly the rocket belt. Just looking for shit like that.
Looking for fucking...
That was good living down there. They had a club with a really nice bar in it and everything. It was just a... But they had fixed it out really, really good. There was a sign above the bar that said free drinks during rocket and mortar attacks. Well, it happened. And everybody starts running to the... bunkers.
Or run into the bar?
No, just the opposite. Getting out and going to the bunker. And we go behind the bar, start pouring. Well, the club manager comes in and has a hissy fit. We're pointing that sign. He says, that's just for blah, blah, blah. Wrong thing to do. One of the blues came back later that evening and through persistent CS and all his air conditioning outlets, just ruined that place.
Hey, the sign said free.
Yep, it said, I don't care what you determine. Yeah.
Free is free.
Yeah.
But that was the shit that made it bearable for me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I told you about smoking cigarette when you asked me what was the one song that I remembered.
I remember. Hey Jude.
Yep.
I remember.
And I told you why.
Yeah, it was the first thing you heard when you got there, right?
Not really. We were standing outside of one of our bunkers one night, smoking and joking, and there was a sniper. And every time we'd hear, pew, pew, and Hey Jude was playing at that time.
I remember.
Yeah.
That's awesome. There you go. That's me. I'm on the right.
Hey.
It doesn't flip so good, probably.
Yeah. Yep, there you go. One thing, thank God, we didn't have to have all that gear strapped on us when we were back in our little corner of the world.
And then we built an outhouse with our 55-gallon drum cut in half, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did we vent it? No, we did not. So poor guy walks out there, and we would smoke cigarettes to keep the flies away while we were in the outhouse. And my man blows the thing to pieces because of all the methane that it accumulated.
Jesus.
Just absolutely exploded an outhouse.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Laura about it today. One of the most demoralizing, denigrating things you can do to a GI is we used to make them burn shit.
I've done it.
Well, yeah. I mean, we used to do it for the guys, too. I mean, we'd fly 12, 13 hours. They'd be out there doing their dailies on the aircraft or whatever, you know, getting shit ready, cleaning weapons, and they want them to burn shit when they're done. So we used to, and, you know, the CEO used to get bullshit. You can't be doing that. You're awesomer. Yeah, that's why.
That's funny, because that's changed a lot. That's like eating now. Like, everyone burns.
Well, that's
everyone
good. I'm glad they did that.
I was out there when my man blew up the outhouse. I was out there burning it with a captain. He was the good. SF detachment commander.
No, I'm really grateful that they have at least had the common sense to.
Nobody should be above that.
No. Nobody at all. Here's a picture of a couple of the guy on this side is a gun pilot, Jody Robinson, and the other two are scouts. That's at Da Nang. That was at the CAV 15TC.
It looks like you took that picture 2 weeks ago.
There's one of me, and I'm trying to find it, in a similar pose with a couple of those guys. One of the guys that flew scouts, his dad was a senior Pan Am captain. He used to fly in all the time and come visit us.
Did Pan Am take you over?
No, I went over in Braniff.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Lucky.
Yeah, no shit. Here's a photo. If I have shown these to you before, I apologize.
You have not.
But that's just a pre-mission thing we were doing. That's in Tainin.
Where are you? This is you?
Yep.
You have an
but
age.
That was the perimeter. That was the berm.
I love it.
Yep, that's where we played volleyball right next to the berm.
Beach volleyball in Vietnam.
Killer volleyball.
Man.
Here's one of my favorite pictures. Going to the shower.
Yes. Yes. With the tank on top. Yes.
And if you didn't get back soon enough, you had, luckily, a cold shower.
Yes. So we had instead of the tank on top, they replaced it with a blivet for us. Mm-hmm. Like one of the
That's good. At least you had enough water.
Where'd you go after Rucker? Did you have a base, or did they just send you straight over?
Oh, straight to Nam, do not pass go. I did go up to Fort Lewis and spend a little time up on the West Coast. Took some leave and hitchhiked and got to rent a car and just kind of drove all the way on back. I'll tell you what, I fell in love with Tacoma.
I was stationed up there.
Were you?
I was stationed in Fort Lewis.
Oh, yeah, Lewis, yeah. Well, Tacoma reminded me of New England in the 50s.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it was great. All the old cars and the old folk with their flannel shirts. And
it's a different world.
Cigarettes rolled up in there. Their white world. T-shirts. Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun.
Where would you... Did you go out of Seattle to get to Vietnam, or did you go out of San Francisco?
I went out of Seattle, I believe. I think. I came back through Fort Irwin, I think. Not Irwin. Whatever that one that was near Oakland.
Oh, goodness. I'd have to look that one up.
Yeah. But, yeah, we left out of Seattle, and ended up stopping in Hawaii and Guam.
Maybe? That's how you got over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Hawaii, then Guam.
Yeah, I had my orders to the CAV before I even graduated. I had a horse blanket on my green jacket, blouse, excuse me, and I got to Cameron Bay. And just kind of hung around.
Is that what you guys called the calf patch, the horse blanket?
Yeah, it's a horse blanket. You've never heard that?
I've never heard that.
I'm surprised.
We have an interesting joke now, though. It's the horse they don't ride, the river they'll never cross, and yellow because they're all cowards.
At ease.
Well, you know, the infantry, right?
But yeah, got to Cameron Bay and then got checked in and got kind of acclimated, basically, to the heat and humidity and stench and all that kind of crap. And then received orders to go to An Khe, which was the first CAV headquarters. And on K is where we were soldiers once and young. That's where they were when they shipped over.
Good.
That was the primary landing spot for all the CAV aircraft. Got up there, and I don't know why, but I just got this wild hair, something blocking my sensibilities totally, and I volunteered to go to the 1st of the 9th. I figured if I was going to go, I was going to have fun and do... I did.
I mean, what were your other options?
Oh, just wait to see where they would end up sending me.
Oh.
You know, like Jerry Hess's unit, the 229th combat.
They still exist.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. 229th,
is the 2nd of the 20th ARA, Aerial Rocket Artillery Battalion, still in operation? Yeah, they had that. And then we had the Flying Circus. It was a Loach operation. I don't remember their unit designator, but you know, there was a bunch of different shit, or you could catch a real break and they'd send you to the hook transition, which wouldn't have been too bad.
Did they do them in country, the hook transition? Oh wow.
Yeah. Yep, they did all that shit in country. Cobra transition, hook transitions. The CAV did. I don't know about anybody else.
That's really cool though.
Yeah.
Did you fly lift the whole time, nothing else?
Yeah.
Out.
Yeah, Dong Ha. But yeah, then I got to on K, and I learned about putting my hat on the bar during happy hours at the club. It ended up costing me about $300 in drinks. Everybody that was nursing a beer decided they were going to drink doubles. I walk in and I take my hat and put it on the bar. Next thing I hear, clang, 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 clang. Dumb shit. You never put your hat on a bar.
Oh, okay. Now you owe everybody.
And you buy everybody.
I would like lobster and a...
No, it was... Fortunately, it was just booze.
Like Belvedere, please?
Yeah. Well, like I said, anybody that was nursing a Ballantine beer or something, yeah, here they go. They're ordering Johnny Walker, but that was my first night at Anke.
I'll take Blue Label and my 10 closest friends will as well.
And then maybe a day or two later, I get told to get out of Huey. You're going up to LZ Sharon in Quang Tri, which is in Northern I Corps. And we flew up there and got off the aircraft, went over to see the CO. All our hooches were bunkers, which were perimeter security bunkers. So, you know, we slept and shot out of the things. So the CO and the XO were sitting there. And it was me and another fella. And it's both a warm beer and welcome us to the unit. And said, okay, you're both going to the lift section. I think I had said something stupid about I wanted to go fly scouts, but I don't know. Fortunately, they didn't want me to go fly scouts. So they point to a pile of sandbags and say, go over there and start filling. Go make yourself a hooch. And you saw the photos I had of the hole we dug with the big 8x12 center beam and all that got blown over in the typhoon. Oh, what a god-awful, miserable time that was.
The Army has this amazing ability to ruin anything. It's awesome.
Was that where you had the monkey or the mama lynx that had her kittens?
That was where the mama lynx was, yeah.
A lynx came and had some kittens.
In the discarded 2.75 ammo boxes, rocket boxes. We were in, her mom and I were in Destin, Fort Walton, someplace, having dinner, and you know, it turned this one gentleman that was in there, you know, where do I know you from? And we go down the list, and it ends up we were in Vietnam at the same time. Who'd you say? We were in 1st of the 9th, and he was an ammo loader. And I said, oh, yeah? Really? I said, do you remember what we had living in the box of the discarded? 2.75. I was, yeah, we had the Mama Lynx and all that. And he said, do you remember taking me for a ride in a loach? And I said, I sure and shit don't. You talk about a small world. Never owe anybody any money.
That's a true statement. Good night. Where was Sharon at? Highlands?
Pretty much, yeah. It was, show you. Quang Tri was the 3rd Marine Base Airfield. It was east of Quezon. And the Rock Pile and LZ Carroll. And I don't know if those names mean anything to you. But
east of Quezon does.
Yeah, I'm sure that. Tell you what, just put in Quang Tri.
And that's pretty close.
Yeah, we were right on the outskirts of it. We were right across the river from there. Quang Tri is where the 3rd Marine Division had their headquarters, and then...
Okay, got it. Were you close to... Okay, got it. You were northwest of Hue?
Yeah, right.
Okay, cool.
That was all REO out there. The nice part about up there was... I don't know what the nice part about up there was, now that I think about it. But we had a lot of excitement with aircraft with red stars on them and things like that.
Well, those don't exist.
No.
That couldn't possibly have happened, right?
Nope. I think I told you, that's why I used to pick up those teams and unmarked aircraft and no markings on uniforms, no wallets or anything like that. We'd fly them into Cambodia, 50, 60 clicks into Cambodia, and drop them off and never see them again. And there'd be a couple of blonde-haired, blue-eyed guys, a couple of Asian-looking dudes, a couple of, regular old grunts, all in mixed civilian clothing. And of course, we weren't doing anything like that. And
I don't know what you're talking about right now.
Yeah, no sabe nada. We had a night mission up by the DMZ River one time, and there were 2 cobras, 2 loaches, and I was flying a high bird. I think we were throwing flares out. But all of a sudden, one of the cobras said, there's a indigenous aircraft flying through here. Yeah, we couldn't say who they were. And all of a sudden, I saw 2 cobras come to a hover, and they both salvoed. I don't know if they hit it or not, but they took a good shot at it.
Nice.
Into Cambodia.
That'll learn you, Ivan.
Then, of course, you had the, after X number of missions into North Vietnam, they would send aircraft crews home from, the Air Force and Navy. If you had 35, incursions into North Vietnam, and you get a loach pilot down there on the river. 1, 2, 3.
I'm good, right? I can go home now?
I can go home now. I go home now. You had to get it where you could. But that's where I saw the misused word awesome, the power of a arc light strike. They dropped it on the river there on the DMZ, and I actually saw it change the course of the river.
It's a lot of bomb.
Yeah, it's a lot of power.
I made fun of, I told Laura, because I never had the opportunity to make fun of the actual people, but the 130s that would come and get us out of Kuwait and move us around in Iraq. Oh, what's it like here in country? Like, what? You mean Balad? They were like, yeah. I was like, there's an Olympic-sized pool here and a pizza restaurant.
I love it. Yeah.
We're not in Da Nang, dude. Like, this is easy.
Yeah, that's kind of how we felt about Da Nang and Saigon.
That used to mystify me, because they have like chilies and stuff down in Kuwait. So it was like, this is they're in the shit.
Yeah.
Going up to Balad, which is like, again, probably the only rule I remember there was the, at the Olympic pool that was there was the girls had to wear one piece. That was like the rule. Otherwise, you can go swim. You had every type of restaurant you wanted. We were like, you were in Little America right there.
Yeah.
In country, boys.
We obviously didn't have anything like that, but there was a Chinese restaurant in the city of Long Bend. It was amazing.
Really?
Some of the best Chinese food I've ever eaten. And, you know, we'd fly up there and everybody's in there. And Nate, yeah. Yeah, you go up there and we'd secure the aircraft and we'd have to take the 60s with us. And everybody in there is in Class Bs or white. Yeah, you know, we're schlepping the 60s. Anything else of any value that... And, of course, we've got jungle fatigues.
Right.
And they're red in color because of all the dirt and shit. And we never polished our boots. It was verboten. Couldn't do it. We go walking into this place and they'd be looking at, you know, who these, you know, everybody, he'd clear a nice big hole for us. We'd sit down and have a great meal. And then the 101st had a club called the Canopy Club, and they had this gigantic cargo chute above the bar and everything. And it was an old club, and we never left our enlisted crew members anywhere. We always took them with us. So what we would do is take one warrant bar and put it on their uniform.
We're all warrant officers here.
Yeah, we're all warrant officers at heart. Well, see, in my day, a 20, 21-year-old W-2 was not uncommon.
Right.
Because we had the high school to flight school, wobbly ones.
Wobbly ones.
And then after one tour in Nam, you W-2.
Nice.
You're legal to go. But, what was I going to say? Yeah, it's a lie anyways.
What about, was the Vietnamese food in Vietnam better than American Vietnamese?
The best thing in Vietnam was the little noodle shops all over the place. Like at that Vung Tao, you go and have a nice bowl of, not pho, but just noodles, because pho was a North Vietnam creation.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It came out of Hanoi and played. Yeah. That's where pho comes from.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Wow.
But
that's some commie food right there.
Some of the best French bread I've ever eaten was in Vietnam. Outstanding.
It's the damnedest thing.
French breads, pâtés.
It's the damnedest thing. Those French colonies,
mm-hmm.
They eat well.
Yeah. Yep. It was just amazing. Well, we didn't have much opportunity to get Vietnamese cooking unless we went like an in-country R&R or something.
I had no idea that the pho was commie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of changes my opinion. The trays that they had to boil?
No. We had lerps.
Oh, we had lerps,
C's,
yeah.
And, you know, when the mess daddy cooked, he did great. He was a former general's personal mess sergeant and got himself in a little personal issues and got busted down.
He lost your game.
He went out from EA to E6 or something, and he was our game. And you know that man, even during the monsoons, always had mermites of chili, soup, and coffee going 24/7.
This is a guy that knows.
Pouring down, water flowing. If the VC had a navy, they could have wiped us out. They could have floated over the concertina wire. But yeah, and then, you know, they had some hot meals, but it was mostly lerps, C's, or shit that we just got. You know, if somebody went to Da Nang, they'd pick up something, you know, bags or something. But
we had the lerps too. We liked them just because they were different.
All those lerps are outstanding.
Yeah, there was something different, and they usually had good seasoning.
But we had something called bee rats.
What are those?
They're, you know, number 10 cans with meat, hot dogs, hamburger steaks, things like that. Potatoes, vegetables.
Potatoes are rotten.
Rotten grottens. We had ration cards in those days. We'd collect everybody's ration cards and get beer and soda to give to our enlisted because they were not authorized to have any alcohol. You know, from working on the aircraft or the blue infantry guys that were with us, we always gave them 2 beers and 3 sodas at the end of every day. So we used our ration cards for that. And of course, buying the little mini refrigerators or, you know, occasional jug of Jack Daniels or something came out.
That's awesome you guys could get that.
Yeah.
The modern army is very Puritan.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, the idea of where you were and kind of put a damper on all that crap, too. made many a beer run in an H model with all the seats pulled out and just, you know, one little seat in the back for the door gunner and the crew chief. I forget how many cases could we put? 239?
In an H model?
In an H model. Like that. With every, you know, every, literally every hell hole.
Are you dragging the skids to get it up?
Bouncing. Hoping to catch a translation of it. And of course, around the Class 6 door was a roll of concertina wire, and that's always made it exciting. But her mom went on a cruise or something down to Vietnam, and the Navy headquarters and officers club is called the White Elephant, and it's been taken over by the Vietnamese, and they've turned it into this really luxurious whatever office building and stuff, but it's still there. It's kind of nifty to see.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we had a we moved south. The entire first Cav moved down to Tain Inn, which was, I don't know, northwest of Saigon, right over there by the Laotian border, the Parrot's Beak, and all those, where all that crazy shit went on when we weren't flying in Laos. You know, Nixon, I swear to you, you know, we're losing 30, 40 aircraft a day in there. But one of the local village chieftains wanted to thank us for being there, you know, keeping them safe, relatively speaking. So they had a nice dinner for us in their village, and we all went over, we all cleaned up real nice, and went over there, and of course you don't insult your host by not eating what they put in front of you, and that's the first and only time I ever ate monkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, quite interesting.
Tastes like chicken?
No. Tastes like monkey.
Tastes exactly like what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see how that would be offensive if you didn't eat it. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was amazing.
What years were you there? 68,
69.
Were you there after Tet?
Yeah, right, just after Tet.
That's demoralizing for the team.
Yeah. We had our fair share of fun. That's like one of the things that Vietnam veterans will instinctively fall into as soon as you start talking about entertainment in Vietnam as the little Filipino... come on, my mind. Who did all the stuff for the PX and those shows that used to come over?
Oh, goodness.
Like the USO shows?
USO, thank you. Oh, you know, and the first words out of anybody who's ever been in Vietnam and has seen a USO show is, lowering on the liver. It's like, it's in here. It will never go away. Yeah, actually, the little Thai groups that would come over or whatever, they were worse than the Filipinos with, you know, not being able to understand. But
they love them some American music.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, there's that one scene in Apocalypse Now where they do a USO show that wasn't too far off.
Really?
Wasn't too far off.
Wow.
Little overdone slightly, but not too far off.
Wow.
Depended on where you were, of course. I mean, if you were in where all the ramps were, you didn't do stuff like that. But out where we were?
Some things never change.
Nope. Yeah, I would go visit classmates of mine, and they'd be in places like, you know, just on the outskirts of Saigon or Long Binh or, you know, some of those really, really heavy-duty joints. And, you know, they'd have real buildings and real air conditioning. You go into the operations area, and they had flush toilets. And, you know, we go to flush the toilet 20 times just to hear it flush.
I forgot what it was like. Like, I forgot. You know what was crazy? You probably with me on this one. When I flew home, they picked me up at the airport in SeaTac to drive me back to Tacoma or to Fort Lewis. Mm-hmm. It boggled my mind to be on pavement, like how smooth the drive was. There was no pavement anywhere we went.
Yeah, well, I mean, I understand that. I don't think that had the effect on me that maybe it did for, you know, for you. I don't remember what the most jarring thing when I got back. I just remember taking an R&R and going to Hawaii. And when I got to Hickam, went over to the club and sat down at the bar, ordered two draft beers and two BLTs. That's the first thing I did when I got there.
Those are good choices.
Well, you know, just didn't get stuff. We didn't have fresh lettuce and tomatoes and things like that. But maybe I don't know. When I got back to the States, maybe I just have forgotten what might have been significant when I came back.